Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Bankroll Burners, the podcast for poker players who can't stop getting it in bad. I'm Mike.
And I'm Josh.
And as always, we are going to be bringing you some hands we've played that were tricky hands, hands we maybe probably definitely could have played better. We're going to be discussing them. We're going to be learning things from each other. We're going to be getting worse at the game while having the appearance of improving at the game. That's really what we're all about here at Bankroll Burners.
Absolutely. I've definitely got a couple interesting ones. I had this unique, somewhat unique experience of playing at a table with a guy who is very clearly a seasoned tournament player, maybe even a pro or semi-pro, playing 1-3 cash games, who it was really weird because he was like quite short stacked. It just like jammed a lot. And I was like, huh. This is like, you know, it's kind of a fun, he's wearing like a World Series of Poker hoodie. He was like, oh, I just got back, had a positive year, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, this guy sounds like he's very bad at poker.
Oh, I mean, quite so, you know, he was at the right table for people who are bad at poker.
Yeah, I don't know. It's pretty sus. I don't know if he really, I feel like mentioning you had a profitable year pretty much excludes the possibility that you had a profitable year.
But he didn't play any mixed game events, so I just kind of discounted all his experience.
Yeah, right. If you didn't play any mixed game events, so. All right, well, cool. Is it any of your hands feature this player?
No, but like this, just like an example of, I don't know, maybe, I mean, this guy might just be bad at poker. I, at the time, had chalked it up to him being more of a tournament player who was just kind of a total donkey in cash games, where he like 3-bet jammed a like 9-4 deuce flush draw flop with ace 9, and he was like, well, you either have an open ender or a flush draw or a set, and he had ace 9, like, and I had a set, and he got owned, and I was like, well, maybe you shouldn't have 3-bet jammed for like 170 big blinds, right? But you know.
Fascinating. Yeah. Okay.
But I don't know if you can chalk that up to just being inexperienced with deep stack poker or if that's just like a donkey play.
I mean, yeah, definitely. I think when you're short stacked, you know, certainly that plays like that can work. So it makes sense if he's, you know, a tournament grinder.
But anyway, let's move into the hands.
Yeah. So I don't have any hands from this week, unfortunately, because I have not been able to play poker. I've been working. Because, you know, if I were to, poker is not our jobs, for the viewers who are wondering. If poker was our jobs, we would be living on the streets.
I'd think so. And I mean, right, I was about to say, oh, you didn't get a chance to play poker and you're doing work. I mean, that means you're like plus minus in money. Your net money must be much higher than average.
Yeah, seriously. But it's okay. Next week I'll be back at the grind, I'm sure. But it's okay because I have some hands from a few weeks ago that are pretty interesting. So
they were punts then and they're punts now. So
it's absolutely true. So, okay. I got an interesting hand that I think it exposes a leak in my game that is just like really omnipresent and I don't know how, I really suck at fixing. So this is from a 2-2 game at Best Bet Jacksonville and the straddle was on in this hand. The straddle had been on intermittently in this game.
Is it 4 or 5?
It's 4. 2-2-4. Yeah, a $300 cap in this game. We're six-handed at this point. We're kind of at a lull in the night. We were at our table was crazy for a while, and we hit a lull. And this was during the lull.
And what's the effective stack at this point?
We are 330 effective with the main villain.
Okay, so just under 100, 80-ish big blinds.
With
the straddle.
So we have king of clubs, 10 of spades, and we are in the straddle.
Okay.
And everybody but the small blind limps.
Perfect. And I go ahead four limps.
Four limps, and I check my option. I don't really like squeezing in this spot with this hole.
No, and I think there was a Questlive Poker maybe recently where, you know, a lot of the, I don't know if Bart necessarily agreed with that, but I think he kind of came around that, you know, if especially in a game where you're playing with like a bunch of like high VPIP people who want to see flops, it's okay to cut out like the bottom part of your squeezing range that you might raise sometimes. But like if you just never have fold equity and it's always like once one guy calls, everyone's calling, then like don't, then just no reason to put this hand into our raising range.
Absolutely. And I'll in this table in particular, like, the under the gun, like, I guess in this case, what would that make him? The hijack. The first to act player would be the hijack here. So the hijack Was very high VPIP, really liked seeing flops, and was also kind of a wacky player. He was like a definitely a thinking player, not a thinking player who had studied the game, but like a thinking player nonetheless, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he definitely thought things through. But he also, like, and this is going to come up later, he used the weirdest bet sizings. Like, okay. weird bet sizing. And this is going to come up later. So I had definitely observed that from him already.
Okay.
All right, so five-way limp pot.
Lovely.
Flop comes ace of spades, queen of hearts, five of clubs.
Okay, so we flop a gutter.
We flop a gutter. What do you like to do here? Checks to me. What do you like here?
I just like to check. I don't know that our hand is super strong. I mean, I kind of go back and forth in these like multi-way like limped pots, especially like from sort of the big blind position of, you know, leading out on boards that maybe could be perceived as favorable, or if it's super multi-way, you know, kind of treating it more like a bomb pot and preferring to always check from early position and play a purely sort of check raise, check, usually check raise or fold, or sometimes check call strategy depending on the hand. Been trying to mix a bit too, so I probably wind up checking here and see what the action goes.
I agree. I don't really think a bet accomplishes very much here. However, I was intending to check raise. I don't think our hand is strong enough to check call on this texture, and I also don't think we have a ton of draws to check raise on this texture. So not that we have that much thick value, although we certainly can have every possible two pair except ace queen.
Yeah.
So I guess there's two possible two pairs. We can have pocket fives. So we definitely have some thick value. I might check raise ace 10 here, to be honest with you, even, you know, for value.
Yeah, so I think that's totally fair. I think putting this in a check raising range is fine. I think another nice part of checking is that we can definitely save ourselves some money sometimes if like action just like goes crazy.
Like, right, if it goes like bet call, then we can
bet call, bet raise, something like that. And then that's kind of an advantage to playing a pure check strategy too, is that if you did have a hand like ace 10 and the action was like bet raise call, you could just be like, yep, all right, good, my top pair is clearly no good.
Yeah. So
it sounds like we check
and it checks through.
Okay, well, that's fine. I like seeing free cards.
I also like seeing free cards, especially when they're the jack of clubs.
Jack of clubs is an excellent card, and we hold the king of clubs in this case as well, right?
Correct.
So that's nice, because for anyone who's just listening, board is now ace of spades, queen of hearts, five of clubs, jack of clubs. Hero has king of clubs, ten of spades. You just made Broadway.
The nutsos. So it checks to me, and I go ahead and bet.
Okay. I probably like checking here or betting very big. But I kind of like checking here better, because I think like this jack is probably going to connect with some people. I think live players are going to check back ace X some amount and might now bet it at this point. And I like being able to check raise. I don't, you know, and if it checks through again, then we're probably like our opponents probably don't have hands that we're going to be able to get value from anyway.
I don't know. I mean, I see that. I guess my counter argument would be like, people, no one's really shown interest in this pot. And the jack doesn't introduce any strong hands other than mine. No one should really have pocket jacks here, you would think.
Yeah, maybe so, queen jack is one that would be checked.
Queen jack is possible. So, but I think by and large, like given it checked through on the flop, I might expect it to check through on the turn. And I think that's a disaster.
Yeah.
I also think that there are a lot, especially after it checks through on the flop, I think there are a lot of hands that we can get action from. Like, we can get action probably from any queen. We can get action from a bunch of random draws, club draws, maybe not gutters, but open-enders possibly.
Maybe some gutters.
Yeah, sure, possibly some gutters. We're okay. In a splashy live game.
So then, yes, I'm happy to bet.
Yeah, I do. I feel good about betting here, I think. So I understand the rationale, though, of trying to go for a check raise. But I do bet 15.
And I think we just got a five. I mean, I would probably just bet like 25 here. I might just, yeah. Like, I don't know. I feel like in a limped pot, you really can't go wrong just kind of blasting away.
I agree that this was too small for me. I mean, it's, you know, obviously the rake's been taken out, so 15 is pretty close to pot.
Yeah, I mean, fair enough. I definitely, you know, it is one of these things where, especially if we think we might get called in a couple places, our bet size here can definitely affect the bet size we go for on the river.
Yeah, so I think it was appropriate. It would be appropriate to go for maybe 20.
Yep, you're right. I mean, obviously there's the rake and stuff, you know.
Yeah,
Stupid rake.
Yeah. Stupid rake. The rake is too damn high. So, okay. But yeah, we bet 15. I agree. Sizing up a little is appropriate. But remember the player who likes to see flops with the weird bet sizing?
Yep.
Next to act goes ahead and makes it 100.
Wow. Okay.
And it does fold back to me.
So it's heads up at this point.
Yeah. There's no one in between.
Wow. Okay.
What do you do here?
It's a pretty tricky spot. I feel like we're a little handcuffed. Because it's like, it, you know, obviously jamming like can't be that bad, but are we balanced at all when we jam?
Is he balanced when he makes it 100?
Right. I mean, that's true. And that is a good, I mean, if our opponent, I mean, it's weird. It's interesting. I guess it depends on what showdowns you've seen from this player. When you say he uses a weird bet size, you know, is he consistently using weird bet sizes with value and bluffs, or are his weird bet sizes really more, you know, going big with thick value and smaller with bluffs or thin value?
I have seen him go very large with top pair plus and combo draws.
Okay. Well, then I definitely like jamming here. I mean, we do block some combo draws, but we also, you know, he can still have 10x of clubs.
Yeah.
You still have like a pair and a flush draw he might do this with, it sounds like. Definitely ace-x of clubs, possibly queen-x of clubs as well.
Yes, yep.
Yeah, so if that's the case, then I think a jam here is likely in order. He probably won't be folding those hands.
I agree it's completely unbalanced, but it's probably right. I mean, and this is why I talk about a leak in my game where like I get too... I think a certain good rule of thumb for live players, especially at the lower stakes, is when they really like their hand, just put the money in if you have the nuts.
Yeah, I mean, that's completely fair. Like, I definitely have noticed that as well and been, tried to do it. But there are still some times where it just feels weird where I'm like, you know, can I just jam here? Like, and I know, I remember one hand actually a few weeks back that we talked about on the podcast where you wound up jamming for like 150% pot in a spot where you really are, you know, by theory, we're not allowed to do so, but it just didn't matter because you're like, well, he likes his hand and it's not as good as mine.
Yeah, exactly. We had I think the second nuts and we were
had a bottom set or something.
We had bottom full house, but he never. Yeah. Yeah, we would have had to. There was one combo, exactly one combo that beat us, so we weren't worried about that. So yeah, no, for sure. And so I think that it's generally a leak in my game that I don't go for it in these spots, just that one hand notwithstanding. And I didn't go for it here. I just called.
Yeah, and it's just a bit weird because, I mean, it's tough to lead on rivers, especially if you think he has, like, combo draws a decent percentage of the time because, like, we either now lose to the combo draws or we may not get more value from them.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is more likely. There's a lot more top pair plus in his range than there are combo draws.
Do you think that even after the flop checked through?
Yeah, it is weird. It is weird. I don't know. I mean, you think like the turn was a jack. Like, maybe he has queen jack, like you said.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely possible. But that also is a hand that's just going to snap call a jam, right? If he's... I definitely think I prefer trying to just get the value now, and it is
100%.
I think that the key to, even though we are being unbalanced, I think the key here is really that our opponents are so unbalanced in this spot. Like, an opponent like this is only raising to this sizing with a strong hand or a super strong draw, and either of those hands are just not going to fold to our jam.
No, I think it's a huge punt to not jam here, but I didn't jam, so I just called, which sucks. But, okay. So, we go to the river.
Okay.
You know, so the river now comes the seven of spades.
Seven of spades is a pretty big brick to me. It looks like we still have the nuts.
Yeah. So, I decided to block here.
Okay. I think that's okay. I think that's reasonable.
Yeah. I was concerned he would check. Because, I realized after I did it. Like, this is the thing. Nothing we do on the turn doesn't look strong. Everything, any action we take on the turn looks strong. So I realize that, like, when I call his, like, absurd overpot raise, like, I look really strong. So, and we know live, low stakes live players are showdown monkeys, and I just did not want this to check through.
Yeah.
So I went ahead and blocked that here.
Okay.
Do you think we can jam, like, lead jam river ever?
The thing about lead jam, I just don't think we're going to get called a lot when we lead jam. I actually like blocking a lot because I also think that, like, it gives him the opportunity to turn his hand into a bluff if he does have some sort of misdraw that he decides that he wants to bluff. It kind of depends on the player, obviously, but I also just think that a jam, if he does only have, like, a one pair type hand that he kind of, like, live spazzed with, then we're not going to get called if we jam. So I think I do. I'm in favor of this block if we choose to just call the turn.
Okay.
Well, I think the reasoning is sound. I agree. I don't want it to check through, and I think it will. I mean, live players, absolutely showdown monkeys. You could absolutely see a live player checking back queen jack here.
Sure.
Which would just be a terrible, terrible news.
Yeah. So I block $50. I bet a quarter pot.
Cool.
I could probably go a bit bigger. I think I could probably, like, it's not a true block if we lead 100, but I think we probably can lead 100, to be honest.
Yep. Yep. Again, so, that's a total exploit. I mean, the pot's 225, and we basically have 225 behind for our listeners. So it's like, you know, if we bet 100, then we just do not leave ourselves enough behind to fold to a jam. Like, it just really wouldn't make sense from a theoretical perspective. I'm happy just going 50 also, and I think we can do that with, like, a bunch of hands. I think we can even bet 50. Like, we can block with, like, missed draws if somehow we arrived here with, like, a missed combo draw ourselves. Like 10-9 right, right. of and clubs then
we
get, or something.
We fold out his air sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, like we fold out worse, you know, better clubs or maybe even like a jack or something if he has that somehow. Yeah. So I do like this block.
Okay. Yeah, I felt all right about it. So I go ahead and lead 50, and he snap calls. And
oh, no.
You aren't going to believe what he has. I swear to God, if he had not turned over his hand, I would have 100% thought he was lying to me.
5-5.
Queen.
Oh, what a, I mean, there's like $175 more dollars there that I want.
I know. It's such a, like, first of all, this man open limped with queen and then checked the flop when he flop middle set. I mean, what the hell, man?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was pretty bummed.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just interesting because yes, obviously, in this particular case, if we lead jam, we are going to get all the money in. But I just don't think, in general, even though, you know, we'd be jamming for 4x more, like, I don't think we'd be getting called more than a quarter of the amount we'd be getting called going 50. I think if we go 50, like, he's just going to get so curious with, like, any queen X or better.
Right. So, no, I feel fine. But I can't, like I said, could have gone a little larger on the block. Ultimately, I feel fine about my river play once I make the turn decision, but I think jamming turn is just a must against this type of player. So that's not from a balanced perspective, but from an exploitative perspective, this is an easy thing to take advantage of in live games that I need to be better about.
And from a balanced perspective, I actually think your play is probably quite good. Just call turn, block river, because again, I just think you do that with so many hands. If you're playing against another opponent who is somewhat balanced, then they may raise a lot on the river, like it's and like call with like just a ton of hands for the price you're giving them. So I like your play a lot, but I agree that sort of from an exploitative perspective, let's make the max against the, you know, let's make the max against the showdown monkey. They've got, you know, got exploitative huge raise guy that we can just jam turn.
Yeah. So all right, well, let's move along. What do you got for us?
All right, so I have got actually also a nice limped pot. Played a bunch of limped pots. Felt like I was making some good decisions, some bad decisions, but interested to hear your thoughts here. This is going to be a 1-3 game played out of Chasers. Got a brief session at Chasers this week, as well as my usual weekly session at Encore. Continue to be impressed by the quality of players in the Chasers 1-3 game. Again, a ton of regs that I see all the time and a ton of guys who just love, you know, seeing flops. Great player, great to play against people, you know, definitely some aggressive players, some bluffs, some really fun players, a good time all around. which is just a great average quality of game.
That's great. Yeah, sounds like a good room. So.
And frankly, right. I was hoping to play 2-5, but they didn't have a 2-5 game running at this point. So, you know, we take what we can get. So, yeah, we are in the big blind in this hand. There are four limps. Small blind. Or it starts with middle position, low jack, button, small blind. It's worth noting again that the Chasers 1-3 game is 8-handed rather than 9-handed, which is also just absolutely lovely. Definitely encourages action as well. So there's four limps to me. I have got jack of diamonds, eight of clubs in the big blind, and even I think this is a little too loose.
Too open. Yeah, an easy squeeze spot, of course. We're gonna make it, you know, tax. Yeah, so, okay, of course. Yeah, I checked. Sounds good. Like it.
Yeah, all right. We did it. We were so, you know, we just are making such good decisions. We start this hand, by the way, about 500 effective, which is the max buy-in in this game. So let's go off to the flop, which comes down pretty darn good. It's jack of hearts, nine of spades, and the deuce of hearts. So there is a front door heart draw, and we have got top pair and some crappy back doors.
Okay.
So the small blind checks, and what do you like here?
I mean, usually I like to put money in with top pair and limp pots, so.
Yeah, I think that's fair, and I've been trying to mix a little bit more checking and betting. I decide to check here. I mean, I don't, you know, my hand is a little vulnerable, but with the jack being the top pair, you know, there are overcards that can come, but there aren't a million overcards that can come. I could probably go either way.
Yeah, in limp pots, a lot of times, they can just be so passive. And, like, it's usually much harder to get value on the turn than on the flop, I found, also, weirdly. Because people will just call with, like, the absolute trashiest draws on the flop, which they won't call on the turn.
Yeah.
So maybe it's a little bit unbalanced, but I just really like to pretty much always bet top pair in limp pots.
Yeah, I think that's totally reasonable. I decided to check this time. I would say I probably usually bet top pair in limp pots. For whatever reason, I decided to check. I don't remember why. I was like, well, jack eight, kind of crappy. Just gonna check this one. And then middle position, who is the first limper, actually checks as well. The low jack, who is the second limper, bets 20. And
okay,
it pulls back
20 into
15, give or take.
Okay.
15 okay. Minus the rake. I don't think this is really, you know, thought of as an overbet, given that it's a limped pot. This is definitely a player who's playing for fun, probably not thinking too much about his bet size in relation to the pot. Maybe some amount, but, you know, kind of thinking, well, a bunch of limps, I better get some money in.
Yeah, he has a $20 hand.
Yes, exactly. And it folds back to me.
Okay.
And I think we have a pretty clear-cut call at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you can raise if you want. I don't think it's crazy.
Yeah, that's true. I can raise.
It's definitely thin. It depends how bad you think this player is.
Yeah, and this was fairly early in the session, I think. I had sat down pretty recently, so this player was probably about average. I mean, you know, he was definitely... He didn't seem like a super bluffy player, but... No, I'm thinking of a different player. This guy has, like, no reads on it. It was very, very early. I was just like... You know, I could raise, but I feel like I just put myself in kind of awkward spots, out of position a lot on future streets if I raise with what's now top pair crappy kicker.
Yeah, so, I think that's fair.
And if he does have some trashy draw that he's deciding to bluff, then obviously we are going to hopefully make more just check calling.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you know, this is the thing about, like, if you're in a check raise here, you certainly wouldn't want to go very large. I mean, I don't think I like a check raise here, but I guess I'm just trying to think it through. Like, sometimes people will make these bets with, like, second pair. It's like a see where I'm at bet. And then you raise a small amount, and then they are, like, flustered because they tried to see where they were at, and now you seem to be telling them they're not good, but you've also given them a very cheap price. So, yeah, but you know, if you think he's like, if you don't have any reads on him, I would certainly just call here.
Yeah. So that, I mean, that's definitely a good point and certainly could be what's happening. And it's good insight into sort of limp pots and kind of exploitatively punishing see where I'm at bets.
Yeah, absolutely.
But in this case, we decide to call and the middle position player folds. So it's going heads up. We've got about 55 in the pot now. Let's call it 475 behind. There's piles and piles. And the turn is going to come a pretty big brick. It's the three of clubs.
All right. Can we go to the board here?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, we are holding jack of diamonds, eight of clubs. We had a five-way limped pot. The flop came jack of hearts, nine of spades, two of hearts. So we made top pair and check called a overbet of $20. And the turn now rolls off the three of clubs. So the heart flush draw is still out there. We do not have a heart. And I think we should check here again.
Seems reasonable. I mean, you know, you're both sitting there with, you know, you've got what you might call a mid-heavy range. You know, your hand is going to contain a lot of, you're going to have a lot of made hands or reasonable, decent draws, you know, but you're not going to have a ton of strong hands or junky hands. And he's going to be balanced. You know, he's going to have, he can have anything ranging from junky draws through super nuts. So certainly this card that doesn't change anything is not going to make sense for you to lead on. So I don't really think check makes sense.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, he probably doesn't have a whole lot of super nuts given that jacks and nines are kind of super nuts and there should not be any of those in either player's range.
Well,
you would hope.
You just go through a limped pot that involves queen, so
that's true. That's a good point. You know, people play very differently in New England than they do in Florida.
That's true. But I mean, this dude could have like nine deuce suited. You don't know. That's a strong hand here.
That's true. So I check. And obviously I can have literally any combination of two pair on this board.
Well, we'll probably raise those hands though, right?
Well, I mean, jack nine suited would probably be the only hand that I would.
I mean, on the flop.
Oh, yes. I mean, probably we'll raise most of the time, yes.
Yeah, so I don't think you can have those hands. Here.
Yes, good point. You're right. I probably am. My range is probably pretty capped to, like, you know, medium draws and medium value.
Yeah, so, okay. Yeah.
So I check and he bets 30.
Okay, so he bets 30 into
55. It's about half pot.
Yeah, I mean,
and I will note also, you know, the size is, I mean, it's not that much bigger than the previous bet.
I agree. This sounds like he has top pair to me, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think I can fold just yet.
Well, for sure. I mean, you also can have a better top pair than he does, for the record. Like, it's possible.
Yeah.
But I guess in my experience with live players in the spot, like if he has hearts, he's almost always going to check here. Most live players will. Again, not everybody. But, you know, he'll try to realize his equity. That is, he'll try to get there. So he probably has a made hand here, more than likely. And he didn't bet very much, so it's probably not super strong. That's why it sounds like top pair to me.
Yep. I mean, I think that's reasonable. I think he definitely can have hearts or like an open ender. Like, you know, I do think people will continue. You know, some people definitely do recognize, oh, I have no showdown value. I just have to bet. You know, it's kind of interesting, you know, that as you study, you kind of learn that you really do need to mix, like, you know, checking and betting with made hands and draws. And then that's where it kind of gets tricky and something that I think neither of us has a particularly good grasp on either. But, you know, it's just one of these things where, you know, there's kind of multiple levels of learning where at one point you're like, wow, my 10 high is never good. I always need to bet. And then you learn, oh, my 10 high is never good, but my opponent has already shown strength. So I have to mix in some checks to realize equity as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of interesting, like, you know, when let's say you're in his shoes, right? You're in Villain's shoes and you're sitting there with, you know, 10-8. Like, what are you doing? Are you going to bet?
I'm probably betting.
I mean, so like, we can play this out here. Like, if you check to try to realize equity, right, and you miss, like, I don't know. If the river's like a complete brick, you know, like, I don't even know. What would be a complete brick on this board?
There really aren't actually any complete bricks, but
I guess a six would be the biggest brick, right?
Yeah, I mean, it brings in four or five if either of us have that. Yeah, so six would be a pretty big
brick. So it's like, I mean, it's interesting to note that this board really doesn't have a lot of bricks, but I mean, actually, given that...
So maybe a three. Perhaps, maybe a three would be a pretty big brick. To pairing the pairing the turn.
Yeah, but perhaps given that this board doesn't have a lot of bricks, maybe you do get to check and realize your equity more often. Because if the river is a nut-changing card, which it's likely to be, you may get to blast in position when checked to, or even when bet into.
Yeah, so, it's definitely an interesting spot. And and I think this is kind of also why, you know, we talk a lot, and something that I think we're both working heavily on is learning to make sure you include some, like, traps and strong hands in turn checking ranges, because, you know, you need... Because I feel like my play there, as you said, is often very unbalanced, where the hands I'm checking back turn with are, like, weak hands, or, like, medium draws that, you know, I want to realize a free card with, and then will often blast turn when checked to in the nuts change. But it's actually important that you have some hands that are, like, really good also and can blast and get called by worse when the... Because otherwise you become very exploitable and can just always be called after, you know, when you check back turn and blast river.
Right, absolutely. I will say one thing that I've learned a little bit about, trying to understand more, is in position on the turn, you don't have to have many traps.
Sure.
And the reason for that is because betting in position is inherently polar. That's how I've heard it explained anyway. It's if you bet in position, like, why would you bet in position when you can just check and see a card? Like, a lot of your mid heavy hand, like a lot of your mid strength hands would rather, decent draws would rather simply check. But the nice thing about being in position is the river almost all, like, very often will immediately uncap your range. Unless it's the river is not a complete brick, your range is uncapped.
Yeah.
Even if you checked.
That's interesting, because I think as I think about that, and my level one thinking brain thinks, well, you know, if that's the case, and when we check back turn, we almost always have a mid-heavy hand or draw, then our opponent is able to just put us in tough spots by just blasting the river, blast leading the river.
Yeah, absolutely.
If we don't incorporate traps.
If the river bricks out.
Even if because our opponent, you know, if our opponent check calls the flop, mm-hmm. right, and then the turn goes check, check, our opponent could have a lot of, you know, hands of those types of hands as well. You know, maybe they floated the flop out of position with some sort of double backdoor hand, checked the turn, electing to raise, having picked up a draw, and then, you know, blast river when that draw completes. Like, it does kind of put, it's kind of interesting. Like, I still, you know, I feel like, it's just, it sounds like you've done some actual studying here, and I'm kind of just talking off the top of my head, which, you know, as is Bankroll Burner's tradition, right? So it's just one of these things where I'm like, well, as I think about it now, I'm like, well, it feels like almost if you are only checking back medium strength hands or primarily checking back the medium hands and draws, then you almost like lose the benefit of position on the river a bit because your opponent can just barrel so often.
Yeah, maybe
with the
so.
Proper blockers.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think we should get back to the hand.
Yes, but, you know, nice little tangent. But anyway, yeah. I decide to call. It's the moral of the story.
You decide to call. I think that's appropriate.
Yes, he bets 30. I have a very mid hand to go along with my mid range, and I call. So the pot's now, I believe, 115, 445 behind. The river is now going to come, what I would consider a pretty nut-changing card. It is the Ace of Clubs. So it does not complete the front door flush. There are no flushes possible on the board, but obviously it introduces an ace.
Yeah, and he will have... I mean, this is... The only ace is... What ace does he have besides ace? Like, Ace-X of Hearts, basically?
Yep, I would agree.
He might not bet that hand on the turn. He really might.
I think, by the way, also, and another thing that I've been... And actually, we can talk about this in my last hand, because I have a great callback. I mean, not not callback. I have a great, I have a good, you know, have been trying to study some other spots, and this will be kind of relevant later. But, you know, yes, I agree. He may check back ace x of hearts a lot on the turn.
Yeah, I would check
Yep.
fold a lot here. I think check fold is probably appropriate because, I mean, again, this is probably it's probably it might be I don't know. I would definitely check evaluate. Probably check evaluate. You might not have to fold. It depends what they do. So, but
Yep, and
definitely
I think if it goes check check, we almost always win, unless he has a hand like Jack 10, Queen Jack, but we're gonna win a lot.
check. I actually disagree with you. I think if it goes check check, you will lose a lot. I actually think Queen Jack, King Jack, Jack 10 are all very big parts of his range.
But I think he has a lot of like worse hands. Like I think he has more worse hands. Like I don't know if he decided to like bet a nine twice and is now giving up any kind of bluff that he was bluffing with. If he checks back, we now win. So
I don't know. I don't know if you will win a lot. You might win half the time if you go as goes check.
yeah, sure. Well, I check and he does not check back. He bets 70, 70.
77?
He bet
Okay, I bet
70.
70.
He bet
Oh.
70. I thought he bet 75, but he bet 70 into 115. This is a pretty weird spot. I guess here's my thinking. You know, I was originally thinking like, wow, do I have to fold here? Like, quite possibly. But it's just such an interesting spot because, like, when you kind of think through my opponent's bet sizing on the turn, you would think, like, when he bets this river, he is really repping a very strong hand. When the river comes an ace, he's like repping a
Right.
very strong hand after betting all three streets.
I mean, unless he's really owning your ass with King Jack.
Yep, right. Because like in game, right? I assuming he wasn't betting like a merged range here. I was like, this when he continues to bet like this, I feel like he doesn't have a jack a lot because he's like
Agreed.
continuing to bet for a fairly large sizing. And if he had a hand like a set or two pair, I would have expected that hand to take a larger sizing on the turn.
Agreed.
So to me, it kind of feels like he either ran into an ace with like ace X of hearts, or he's just got some random bluff.
Yeah, I think two pair may like a weaker two pair maybe would play this way, like a nine deuce, you know, but
But is
that's probably
that
a
hand gonna
premium.
continue betting? Like, is that hand then gonna bet big on the river compared, like,
Right. His story doesn't make a lot of sense.
right? Like,
He can't
I agree
really.
with you that a nine deuce may take that sizing on the turn. But I think, I mean, as we discussed last hand, right? Even a hand as strong as like Queen Jack in your case might get checked back on the river. I think this ace might shut down a lot of action from his two pairs.
Yeah, this is a pretty polarizing bet from him. So you figure you're in bluff catch mode at this point, you know, because
Right.
there's a he is repping either ace X or a bluff. At this point, it's kind of what you're saying, and I think I agree with you.
Right. And
So,
so his only ace X that it feels like it makes sense for him to have are ace X of hearts.
right. So there's a bunch of those
Yep.
combos.
But then there's
There's like,
also other X of hearts.
yes, there's other X of hearts. There's also Queen 10, 28. Yeah, it seems like he would be weighted towards his. He would be over bluffing this spot a lot. Kind like at least compared to a typical live player's river range, it's a question of like is your hand isn't the best bluff catcher of the bluff catchers because you are blocking 10-8, which is a hand you want him to have, and even queen eight if he would take it this way. That being said, you don't have any hearts, so that's nice. I think you could probably I think that it. Because his story doesn't make sense, I might be attempted to call here.
Yeah, that's what I do. I kind of come to that conclusion. I'm like, it just is a weird bet size after the small turn bet and this, like, you know, ace card. So I flick in the call.
Can I just
He
say one other thing before you reveal here about this?
absolutely.
I actually think that I'm even more inclined to call because live players are showdown monkeys, and if he has ace five, he will check a lot.
That's true.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, so I do call and he just taps the table and says that was a stupid bet and mucks.
Nice. Nailed him. I
Yeah,
like
so
it.
I
Live read.
Yeah, I mean, it was just like a, well, why is he doing this? I mean, it's not even, you know, it is just like a sizing read. It's like, you know, what? You didn't like your hand that much on the turn, but you liked it a lot on the flop and a lot on the river. It's like...
weird. You know,
weird.
Yeah, I mean, if you... if you had a... if you had taken a small sizing on the river, are you going to call?
Oh, I don't know. That'd be pretty brutal. Because, I mean, it's interesting. Like, because if he takes a small sizing...
you're getting a good price, but...
but he can have all sorts of junky two pairs and stuff, so he might have to fold to a smaller sizing.
And he can even be owning you with King Jack.
So. Yeah, absolutely. Like, if he bets 30 again, we probably just, like, vomit fold.
Do we ever, like, bluff raise? I don't know. Probably not.
Okay. I mean, I think, like, yeah, you know, interesting.
Yeah. Okay, well, all right, we can move along here. So I have a hand from 2-5 at Best Bet Orange Park. It's a $500 cap. We're seven-handed, and the straddle is on, so this is 2-5-10. I am in the straddle here with King-9 of hearts. And guess what, Josh? It's another limp pot. We get five limps to me.
That's a lot of limps.
And I decide to not squeeze here.
Okay. I think this is a much closer spot than either of the previous two. I'm definitely happy squeezing this hand a lot of the time. But I'm also happy checking it sometimes. You know, obviously a big downside to King 9 is that it's so dominated by Ace King in like every possible way. You know, in general, right? Like a problem with like calling three bets with King 9 or three betting with King 9 suited is that you are so crushed by Ace King. I do not expect there to be a whole lot of Ace King out, although I wouldn't discount it entirely. But in general, you know, I don't know. I probably raise here most of the time.
I think that's fair. And I would do a decent amount of raising here. I think because there were so many limps, I decided to just...
well, then you just, like, bomb it, you know? Like, I would probably make it, like... If your default open is, like, 30 with the straddle on, like, I'd make it, like, 75.
Sure. No, I think you can definitely do that.
What's the effective stack, by the way? Because I think that also does factor into it.
455. Well, we're not that deep. We don't have great implied odds.
Right. So, you know, if we bomb it to, like, 75 and we get, like, a couple callers, then we are definitely in dicey situations.
We're in a very... I would say we're in a, like, bad situation.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. It's definitely interesting, but I don't mind the check either, and I would also say this is a spot where image can play a role. Like, if you have a kind of bluffy image, then... and we're just not going to have fold equity, then again, fine to check.
We had a pretty good image at this particular table, so...
that's shocking. Think
I don't know what's going on that night. I think raising here is reasonable. I don't think checking can be particularly bad. And we do check, and the flop comes Jack 9-6 all clubs.
Jack 9-6 all clubs. I was hoping you were gonna say all hearts. So we make middle pair.
That'd be pretty interesting if we had King 9 of hearts and there was a 9 of hearts on the board.
Yep, that makes sense. So okay.
Yep. So yeah, we have middle pair with a good kicker.
Okay.
I will say the one lame thing about checking King 9 preflop is when we make top pair, we are going to be dominated a lot, but if we raise, we aren't going to be. Like, we will fold out the King 10 offs and the King Jack offs when we raise.
Sometimes.
Sometimes. Okay, but anyway, yeah. So we make middle pair. The small blind and big blind check. And I decide to check too.
Okay, I think that's completely fine.
And
in fact, it would probably be a massive punt to bet.
I agree.
Let me say, not just fine, actually good.
Yep. And everyone checks. Checks through.
Okay.
The turn comes the four of spades.
Okay.
The small blind checks. The big blind now bets 30. Into 60.
Yep. And the hand ends here as we muck?
So I actually do call here, which is probably not the best play in the world. Yeah. Do you think this is just a fold? Like 100%? Even
I
after
just
the blackouts?
think like if this were a heads up situation, I would be calling here a lot, right? Like, or you know, if we checked and like the middle position player bet 30 and it folded around to us and we had the opportunity to call heads up, I think it's a completely fine call. I think it gets a little dicey when we have three players behind us.
I think that's fair. Once these play, the turn obviously is a pretty big brick.
Absolutely.
And I guess my thinking at the time, and this was a little bit ago, but I recall the time my thought was, I believe these players behind me are not interested in this pot.
Yeah, and if you have those reads that the people are whatever, they're holding their cards in their hand, they're, you know, we all know what live players look like when they're about to fold and they're just totally done with a limped pot.
Well, I wouldn't say that they were holding their cards in their hand, but it was more like these were fairly fit or fold, like ABC type players. Like I would have expected a bet basically from these guys if they had a particularly strong hand, and I would expect them to fold most hands in
Okay.
this. So.
Well, then I think that's reasonable. If we think that the pot is going to be heads up most of the time, then as I said, I'm definitely okay calling because the big blind can have plenty of bluffs here.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I mean, he could just be stabbing, and that was sort of my thought.
Yep.
And I do call. I think you're probably right that like multi-way responsibility wise, most of the time this should just be a fold. I agree, but we do call. But this is bankroll burner, so obviously we call.
Yep.
And it folds back to the small blind. The small blind is a player who I have a lot of respect for. I've played with him a lot. He is absolutely a thinking player. I think he's a winning player. I don't know. But I'm pretty sure he's a winning player.
Well,
He
maybe
is
he
not.
thinks you're a winning player, you know? So.
I hope he doesn't think that. And he but he is not a, he doesn't study. His plays are fairly unorthodox. He has a limping range.
Cool.
But he's a thinking player, absolutely. Like someone who I know is capable of bluffing. And in this spot, he raises to $100. He check raises to 100.
This is a pretty small raise in comparison to the total pot at this point, right? It's like
Agreed.
half pot raise, maybe.
It might even be less than that.
So just under half pot, right? He's basically
Yeah.
raising 70 into 150.
Yeah. So, and the big blind gets out of the way. So,
Okay.
more or less confirming our suspicion. He quickly folds, more or less confirming our suspicions that he was stabbing. And given that I know this player is capable of making a move, I do call.
Okay. And
What do you think?
I assume that if the big blind called that we would probably be folding.
I would have folded, my cards would have hit the muck before his chips hit the felt. So,
Okay, perfect, perfect.
yeah,
Yeah,
absolutely.
I think this is a fine call. You know, I guess it just depends on the type of player the big blind is, that kind of is your call as you move to the river, where it's like, you know, is he, you know, basically have to kind of decide at this point, you know, are we calling on a brick river if he bets?
Yeah. And my thought at the time was, if he makes a reasonable bet on a fairly brickish river, I will probably call.
Okay.
So.
And I think that's reasonable. And it's just so this is a spot where it's very, very villain dependent, right? Where certain villains will check raise here, but then if they miss, they'll just totally shut down. Versus others will just keep blasting with their ace of clubs X.
I absolutely think he can fire another barrel with the ace of clubs.
Okay. And there are
And I
obviously a lot of draws on this board as well, so yes, happy to make a call here.
So yeah, we call again. I think our call of big, to be honest, I think our call of big blinds bet is a little loose, but I think our call of this raise makes sense.
Yep, I would
Fine. So
fully back that up.
the river rolls off the five of diamonds.
Okay.
So 7-8 comes in. That's about it.
Yep.
And I'm pretty prepared to call here. But then villain overbet jams.
And it's about 345 into 290 I have, so it's not a huge overbet. It's 110%, 115% basically.
Right. But I guess, like, yeah, I think that I was not anticipating this. I will say
Right.
that. So what do you think?
I mean, it's a really gross spot because it's kind of like, when he does this, he's basically repping like 7-8 or like pocket fours or maybe pocket sixes or I guess a flopped flush. It is a bit weird to check twice with the flopped flush in a limped pot.
Is it not weird to check twice then with like he could have like nines or sixes probably with
I mean, a
but would you
villain's kind
expect
of a
him?
thinking player, probably shouldn't have nines.
I've seen he has a limping range. I've seen him. I think I've seen him limp
Yeah, this is like, it's so, you're right. This is like an overlimp from the small blind with like nine
right
nine. That was
also.
okay.
He's not a very like squeeze happy type of player. I don't know that I've really ever seen him squeeze pre with anything except actual like very strong hands. So
Right. Okay.
yeah,
Okay.
or maybe like premium.
Okay. So you
I
think
would
he's made, so
expect
you
him
think he
to
can
limp
have the,
that.
long story short, he could have nine nine, six six, four four, flopped flush, seven eight, basically.
Well, no, I'm asking you those that category of hands which are like very netted. I mean, I probably never have a flush as played.
Right.
I mean, I guess that category of hands he can have. Would you, I would say they're all, I think a set and a flush are in the same category, I guess.
Sure.
Do you expect him to check those hands twice? Agreed that the pocket fours makes a lot of sense, but like, so sixes, nines, and flushes, do you expect him to check those hands twice?
I mean, I wouldn't necessarily. I mean, I don't mind. I mean, we did talk about in the first hand, like, how you even advocated somewhat for checking King 10, a second time on the turn. So I don't hate the, checking a nutted hand just because it's kind of interesting on a monotone board, too, where, everyone might check the flop because they're, like, scared that somebody has the flush, but then once the flop checks through, the action loosens up a lot. Because people are like no longer as worried and the nuts change in people's eyes.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean? Like that stuff, I feel like that it might be a little bit different on a monotone board where people might check those hands. You might be more likely to be able to check raise maybe on a monotone board.
On the turn, you mean?
On the turn, right.
That's interesting. That actually makes a lot of sense.
I don't know if that's really true. It's just kind of something I've observed that definitely, once a flop checks through on a monotone board, it seems like people are not too worried about flushes.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. I think it's probably valuable that our hand blocks 9-9, given that we're pretty sure he can hold that. It would probably be
Yeah.
nicer to have a six, although I don't know that I end up here with a lot of sixes. I mean, what do we want to have? That's like a real question. I mean, what hands do we want to hold here?
Like maybe we want a club in our hand because like a high club that's maybe not the ace of clubs. Even
Like
if we had
king
king
nine
nine with the king of clubs.
would be like a very good bluff catcher, you think?
Yeah, king nine because I think if we're gonna call, I mean, I'm just thinking about, I guess I'm thinking king nine specifically because I'm looking at our hand, but a hand like king nine, queen nine,
Or king six with the king of clubs, I may call that. I may play this way, actually.
yeah, I mean, do you think he ever is bluffing here with like a nine or anything like that, or like do you think there's any merit to sort of having second pair? Do you think that helps us beat anything that he might be bluffing with?
That he's like turning.
And
Well, I mean,
like 10-9 with a 10
I
of
think we beat
clubs or
all his bluffs.
something.
I think having a nine beats all his bluffs. Yeah.
Yeah, right. And but just having a six, like just king six with the.
I would not expect him to turn a nine into a
Could he have
bluff. I mean,
7-7 or 8-8 ever? Is he that type of player who likes to turn pocket pairs into bluffs? Because like 7-7 with a club is a great bluff here.
I think he can do that. I think he can do
So then I
that.
do like having a nine a bit better probably because blocking like a couple combos of 6-6 is probably not as valuable as beating the combos of 7-7 and 8-8.
Oh, I see. Because you're saying we could just lose
Right? Like
to
if you call with king 6 and he's like, "Oh, good call," and flips over 7-7, you're just gonna like.
I'm going to hate
And just
myself.
thinking from a combos perspective too, right? If we have 6-6, we only block two com. If we have king 6, we only block two combos of 6-6. If we have king 9, we beat six combos of 7-7 and 8-8 total that have a club in them.
and we block nines.
Right, and we still block the same.
Obviously, we don't have a club. I mean, what do you think here? Like, this is an overbet. You know, we only have to defend with, like, a little less than half of our hands here.
Yeah, so maybe I just, you know, I think king nine definitely has some merit, but maybe I'd like to have the king of clubs. Because, like, we can definitely have all combos of king nine, given this is a limped pot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what are other good bluff catchers that we would play a similar way? Do we ever have a jack here? I mean, do we ever check a jack on the flop and then play it in the same?
Probably a monotone flop with no club. Jack with no club.
So then maybe jack X with a club might be better. Like, and you know, like jack. Why? I will, like, say, I think,
isn't it better to hold a nine than a jack because we are blocking some of his value with a nine?
Yeah, that's a good point. I guess I'd rather have 9-8 or 9-7 with a club.
Oh sure, because we block the straight.
Yeah, that might be better as I think about it. Because I would, while we talk about worst value, I would say we probably, the kicker on our nine hopefully doesn't matter.
Yeah, so, okay, so there's like better nine, like any 9-7 or 9-8 is probably a better call because we're blocking straights.
Mm-hmm.
I think we could have specifically 6-9 also, big lick here too, and play it this way. So that's obviously a great calling candidate. Maybe like, I don't even know, like 6-4 also is possible.
I almost, depending on how loose this villain's limping range is, 9-7 or 9-8 may even block more combos. If he's playing all the 7-8s, then holding a 7 or an 8 blocks.
I think he would have every 7-8 here, as he probably should.
Yeah, right. But then I think actually that blocks more combos than having 9-6.
Sure.
So maybe that's even better. So I think both of those are probably better than king nine, I will say.
Yeah, and then like worse hands we can show up here with are like, there might not be a ton of worse hands.
Yeah, I mean, like, 10-9 and
king,
8.
King of clubs, X, no pair. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, 10-9 and queen nine also block bluffs, because if he's going with like queen 10 here, is like an obvious straight draw that missed. So those hands, I would say, are worse than ours to call with.
Okay. And having the ace of clubs would be really bad here. So that's a bad, that's definitely a possibility. I don't know. It kind of sounds like this is a very middle of the road hand that we've been.
Yeah. So we could probably go either way, but I'd probably fold.
You fold?
I think I'd fold, because I think we do have a lot of better hands to call with. I think having a club, like a middling club, is very valuable here. Because it's a limped pot, there are just so many suited hands that the villains will show up with. So a middling club just blocks so many of those hands, and especially if we have like the seven of clubs that also blocks, you know, four straight combos, I think that winds up being a bit better. But I mean, I agree that this is probably close to the midpoint, but I don't think you can go wrong slightly over folding your like MDF in a live game.
I agree. And I do fold. I do land on a fold. I just wanted to get kind of, I wanted to talk through the combinatorics with you because I think it's pretty interesting. And Villain later told me he had 6-6, and I don't believe him. He was lying. So.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, we made a good fold, but I thought it was close. I didn't think it was, I did go in the tank for a bit. So.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that's a really interesting hand and nice to kind of think about, you know, from a mathematical perspective, some of the hands that Villain can have.
Yeah. So, cool. All right. Let's wrap it up. What do you got?
On to the last hand. Let me pull it up quickly. This is from the 1-3 game at Encore Boston Harbor. It is a nine-handed game. I will note that this particular hand was seven-handed. This game was often seven-handed because there were two pairs of friends that would often get up and go do something together. It just often wound up being seven-handed.
Sounds like a nice table, which is, to be honest.
What?
Sounds nice, to be honest.
Yeah, which was totally fine by me, especially because it was a very weird dynamic because like both pairs of friends were clearly just there having fun gambling like on golf trips or whatever and giving no action. So, which is like, you know, you'd think those are the types of people that would be in there regularly, but here we are. We are 450 effective in this game. There's no straddle on, so we're 150 big blinds deep. The under the gun player, who is in middle position for this hand, limps. And it folds to hero in the hijack with ace of hearts, jack of spades, and I make it 15.
Okay. Ace of hearts, jack of spades, you make it 50.
15.
I was going to say, I was like, that's aggressive. You make it 15 over two limp, sounds like?
One limp. Just one limp. Otherwise, I'd go to 20. That's usually my default.
You said under the gun in middle.
Under the gun is middle position, given that it's seven-handed right now.
Oh, well, it's under the... Yeah, okay.
It's one of these things, right?
Okay.
And we only get the limper as the caller.
Okay, any reads on this particular player other than that they're limp calling from under the gun?
I don't think I really did. I think this...
Okay. Well, I mean, honestly, it's a pretty big tell. You know they're bad, so...
Yep, absolutely. And if he limp raised, we could probably fold.
I think you have many better hands to call a limp re-raise with than ace jack off.
So there's basically $30 in the pot at this point, and the flop is going to come a fairly large miss. It's going to be queen of spades, six of clubs, four of clubs.
And you have no club.
I have no club. I've got ace of hearts, jack of spades, and the villain confirms our suspicion that he is a classic live player by betting 10.
10 whole dollars? Damn.
So basically a one-third pot donk.
Nice. And we're sitting here with air.
Yep.
Versus probably queen 7 offsuit.
Quite possibly. So do you just like folding here?
No.
Yep. Yeah, I think, because like, yes, I agree, like, as we have discussed ad nauseum, small bet, small donk on the flop equals one pair hand. Weak one pair hand. But that doesn't necessarily narrow it to queen X. Our villain can have some, like, club draws. Our villain can also have some pocket pairs below the queen and below our jack, like nines, eights, sevens. As we have also discussed, many live players do not know how to play pocket pairs. And so they're elect to say, well, I've got a pair. I guess I'm going to bet to see where I'm at. This is also a spot where I would like to tie back to our previous hand, where we were talking about checking back, like, ace-high flush draws. And something that I've been really careful to do is try to play my, like, ace-highs a bit more passively. Just because ace-high is, like, a really strong hand.
Mm.
Like, and that's, you know what I mean? Like, it's
depending on the action, yeah.
But, like, a lot of the time, like, in a case where, you know, you bet flop and villain calls, and then it checks to you on the turn, you don't have to bluff a lot of ace highs because your hand is too strong to bluff. And that's something that I think I've fallen into a lot where I'm just like, oh, I have the nut flush draw. I always need to bet here and pile in money. But it's like, well, actually, even if I miss, if the action goes check, check on the river, I can just win.
Right. Absolutely. You know, I mean, not that you should never bet your nut flush there, draw right there, but yeah. I agree. I think that's important. And I think you're right. We can have the best hand here sometimes. I think we often won't have the best hand here, to be honest with you, but we have a ton of equity. And also this guy's a donk and we're in position, so we could probably bluff him off his hands.
Yeah, I agree. And that's kind of what I was saying is, you know, I also considered like raising here because we do block some of the better queens, but I think, again, my hand is just too strong to bluff.
I agree. I think your hand is too strong to bluff.
And we're way over bluffing if we choose ace-jack as as a bluff candidate here with no clubs.
Yeah. 100%. I think it's really well articulated. I would just call here as a float, as the kids say.
Yes, we float in position, driving the pot to about $50. And the turn is a very welcome sight. It is the ace of diamonds. So the board has now run out. Queen of spades, six of clubs, four of clubs, ace of diamonds. Hero has got ace of hearts, jack of spades, and just floated the flop and binked top pair. And the villain now bets 15.
Can I just say this is an example of what we were another example of what we were talking about earlier, where, you know, when you simply call in position, it caps your range, but the next card immediately uncaps your range as the in position player.
Yeah. So,
pretty cool.
And okay. Do you think we should be doing some raising here? Do you think we should be doing exclusively raising here? Do you think we should be doing exclusively calling, some sort of mixing?
So this is a bet, a pot-sized bet.
No, 15 once again.
Oh!
My ends are clearly not articulating well. Yeah, I need a new mic.
So, yeah.
So it is a slight. upgrade from the previous bet of 10.
I would probably raise like any hand here, to be honest with you. So I'm definitely raising my top pair.
Yeah, like, I think I probably should have.
Absolute ass. So, you know, like he has a bad hand that he is not sure what to do with. So, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Maybe, so would you kind of think of like a small bet here, like maybe like 40 or 45 or something?
Definitely. I would want to give him a terrible time. So I'd make it 40.
Yeah, I think that's definitely right. And I still struggle with playing against these donk bet same bets because I'm just kind of like, I don't know, you know. I kind of get a little, I'm like, well, do I just call here? Should I just like, you know, are we beat here enough where we have to call? Are we going to fold out so many worse hands that like we just shouldn't be raising? But I think against a player like this, this should be a clear raise. Also, just because even if we do fold out a worse hand, those worse hands are not going to be bluffing enough, as we've said, and somehow doesn't penetrate through my skull very well. You know what I mean? Yeah, I know you know what I mean, because you recommend the raising. But it's like, you know, if we fold out a club draw, that's okay, because this villain is not gonna, like, just make a massive bluff on the river, most likely, with a missed club draw.
Absolutely. That's a really good point. You're really not missing out on much by raising here if he folds. So, yeah, I would make a small raise. I mean, 40, 45, whatever.
Yep, and anywhere would you be betting? 30, would you be, if you got called, would you be betting rivers if the river came like offsuit deuce?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hero calls.
Yeah. Okay. Ooh. All right. I don't like it. Yeah, I don't like it.
Yeah, I think that's totally reasonable for all the reasons that you've articulated quite well here. That we just want to put our opponent in a tough spot. They don't like their hand. They don't know what to do with their hand. Let's let them know that they don't like their hand and make them continue being in tough spots.
Yeah. So, okay. I mean, you call. Whatever. It's fine. What happens?
Well, my failure to build a pot immediately comes back to bite me as the river now rolls off the jack of diamonds and my opponent checks.
So this is a rainbow board, basically.
Yep. That no flush has come in. There was a front door club draw that is now bricked out. Hero is now sitting with two pair. Ace-Jack, essentially top two pair. Yeah, especially once villain checks river, our hand is just always, always good.
Yeah, of course, King-10 is the nuts, but villain will never, ever, 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 ever have King-10 here. Okay, well, let's think about this. I want to think about this in two ways, I guess. One would be like from like a range analysis, and the other would be from like a more exploitative line. So think about this from like a range analysis. Like, this card doesn't change anything.
Right.
So the ranges should be what they were on the turn, which his range is fairly mid-heavy. And your range is probably polarized. So I would choose a large... So from a balanced standpoint, I would choose a large size...
Do you think even just calling on the turn in position is pretty polar?
Oh, I'm sorry. You did not raise. You just called.
Right. I am a donkey. So, yes, had I raised, then...
Yeah.
Although it's interesting that you say you would have raised any two cards, because that does kind of preclude our range being polarized.
Yeah, I wouldn't actually raise any two cards. I would probably call with, like, pair. Like, I would actually probably call with most of my marginal main hands. So.
Like Queen X, for example.
Queen X. Absolutely. I would call with Queen X. I might call with 6X. So... yeah, absolutely. So I really think that if we had raised, we'd be polarized. But as called, we are ourselves rather mid heavy. And I don't know what happens when a mid heavy range goes against a mid heavy range. I think you are supposed to probably use a medium bet size. So you probably you're probably supposed to do some checking and some betting in a live environment. You should always be betting.
Do you think there's any merit to us having sort of a better mid-heavy range because we should have all the best ace-x's and the best two pairs and our opponent should have fewer?
Yeah, I do. I think that's fair. I guess what I'm saying is, like, I certainly don't think we can use extremely large sizing. Like, from a balanced standpoint, I don't think extremely large sizing makes a ton of sense.
But if we had raised, do you think then maybe we can use a large sizing because we polarized?
I would be overbetting if we had raised.
Right. Because our opponent should not have King-10 given they don't, or any better two pair or set because they went so small on the flop, they continued small on the turn, they didn't 3-bet turn, and they then checked river, if we're carrying this theoretical out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think that is a great point, and I think that's something that I need to consider more, is I like your discussions of range composition, where I definitely have not thought through that as well as I should have in many spots, where, you know, absolutely should be thinking about what your ranges look like in terms of mid, polar, you know. I mean,
I want to shout out the channel Finding Equilibrium. Is a great channel that I've been watching on YouTube that has been talk about range morphology analysis that I think is really awesome stuff. Go check them out.
Well, I will check them out more because I've seen a couple of their videos, but not as many. Clearly not as many as I should have. Well, great okay, point. Yeah, and
as I said, I would bet like half pot.
And this is really why I wanted to bring this hand on, because I was like, wow, I really feel like I just missed so much value, and I'm not sure where, but I think in two spots, turn definitely should have raised. And here on the river, I decide to bomb it. I bet 75.
Okay, yeah, this is what I was going to ask from an exploitative standpoint, if we should be doing anything differently, because we know villain has, like, trashio hand here. I might, like, from an exploitative standpoint, bet, like, $30.
Yeah, well, what I think we can do from an exploitative standpoint is bet small with value and bomb bluffs.
Yes,
agreed. Like, if we decided to just call with some kind of club draw, you know, we basically decided to call some given club draw but raise others, and we got here with a busted club draw and villain checked, we should just bomb our missed club draw because we're going to get so many folds, and absolutely should be going much smaller with our value to try and get a crying call from, like, Queen 9 or 7-6 or pocket 8s or whatever villain shows up here with.
Yeah, agreed. I think we need to be very unbalanced here from an exploitative standpoint. I think betting half pot is the balanced play and probably fine. I don't think bombing it with thick value is great.
And our opponent snap folds.
Nice.
So we only put in money when we most likely didn't have the best hand.
Nice. Yeah, bummer.
So, womp womp, I think this is a good, I'm glad I brought this hand on because I kind of went back and forth on a couple, but I was like, nope, I feel like I really didn't know what to do on the turn in the river, but I think your points about range composition are really interesting and important to consider. So, you know, we'll make sure I try to consider that a bit more going forward.
Absolutely, yeah, I know. It's a new concept for me, but been very helpful in my game. As evidenced by all the money I've been losing. So,
well, you know what? It's so swingy. My, you know, I offer you the solace of, you know, my year has been so swingy where it's been like, so, you know, the big sessions come. I mean, you know that you had a massive session that was just followed by the slow decline. So you just keep, other than that, you know, if you're not one of the bankroll burners, then keep doing what you're doing and keep your edge. If you are, then keep doing what you're doing and keep bleeding money away to the ecosystem.
Absolutely. Well put, Josh. Everybody, thanks for tuning in. If you enjoyed this video, you should like it, because that's what you do if you enjoy something. You smash the like button. If you've watched two videos and enjoyed them, I don't know what's wrong with you, but you should probably subscribe, because it's really all more of the same, as it pretty much only changes marginally from here. You should also write a comment. Just, you know, let us know how to play limped pots better, because clearly we don't know. And tune in next week.
Yeah, thanks so much for listening, everyone, and have a great rest of your day.